I hate the word ecosystem when people are really talking about marketplaces.
Welcome to the MSS Network, your number one source of information for MSSPs, MSPs, and security architects. Uncovering the state of the nation with Amy Babinchak, owner at Third Tier, and of course, MSS Network Advisory Board member. We're going to look at demystifying buzzwords and all of that wonderful jargon, but also looking forward to what is in store in 2024. Amy, lovely to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for inviting me. State of the nation. That sounds very important.
I know, and I've really often wanted to do this because it takes stock, it looks at what's going on, but it also cuts through a lot of the jargon. So we've usually got three quickfire questions. Let me see if I can adapt them to this state of the nation topic. What's the problem we're trying to solve insofar as why are, you know, the plethora of buzzword bingo going on actually a problem for the MSP and MSSP?
Well, if you don't know what the buzzwords mean or what they're trying to convey, then you don't know how they fit with your MSSP or your MSP. Like, should you use that word? Should you avoid that word? words are important, and they are key to how an industry ends up shaping itself, right? If we think back even to the origin of the acronym MSP and MSSP, they adopting those absolutely defines who you are. So if you adopt a buzzword, it will end up defining how people perceive you and your business.
Yeah, that's very key, because it's not just marketing jargon, it's how you identify. And I remember a couple of years ago, someone said, I'm setting up an MMSSP, a mobile managed security service provider. And I don't know if those particular providers are very numerous, but it does actually, determine what you do. But obviously, delighted to have you on. Where does your passion for this come from?
The reason I got into IT is because I wanted to help people. And, over time, these last, couple of decades, that has shifted a bit toward helping businesses. And so when I think about scaling, that up from where I started in my youth to just wanting to help people use their computer better, now I, helping businesses be more productive, you can't do that today without thinking about security first. Because if the environment isn't secure, if the business isn't insulated from being attacked, there's no way they can be productive with their technology. So that's where it comes from me. I do see it as my continued quest to be helpful.
I like that. And that ties into the trifecta that we try and bring together, the end customer, the MSP, the MSSP, which in the end, that they all have to help each other, or they're going to have to help each other to succeed. But what about the uninitiated provider out there who thinks, no, it's fine, I just need to bundle the latest gadgets and gizmos for my customers? Obviously, we'll explore what those are, but why does this terminology matter to them? I mean, maybe it's a better question to sort of flip it on its head and say, are there many service providers out there who just blindly accept acronyms and buzzwords without really investigating?
Oh, yeah. And I think that, unfortunately, some of the providers of tools are guilty of promoting that themselves to their customers. The industry has consolidated a lot in recent years. And so we have large companies producing many types of tools. And then, the way that they make money from their customer, who is the MSP or the MSSP, is to get them to buy more and more and more and more tools. But can the employees in those businesses actually consume and become expert enough on all of those tools in order to maximize the value for their end customer? Right. Does that make sense, or is the SSP MSP actually just sort of being bled by a thousand cuts from producing and purchasing rather more and more and more and more tools to do the job, right? It's that sort of pursuit and promise of the easy button. But in the world of security, there is no actual easy button because this realm of service changes so rapidly that if you're not on top of what's happening in the industry, having all the tools in the world isn't going to help you at all, right? Unless you know what you're using those tools for, which is that continual education process, right? We have to be very intellectually engaged with what's going on and then how we're going to use the tool to help us. And I feel like there's a lot of it flipped around the other way. Oh, we have some tools. Now, what are we going to do with those tools? Right. And that's because traditionally in the MSP world, that's sort of how we looked at it, right? We have a tool, we develop an SOP, we always follow the SOP, and this is always the result. That doesn't work in security. With that super rapid change, using the tool, developing the SOP, by the time you go through that process, that SOP is out of date and irrelevant already. This is, to me, security is a much more intellectual pursuit.
So with that, and we're doing the State of the Nation, do you think that this year, going into next, maybe is not the year of the one guarded platform for everything? In that, I went to an event recently and they said the MSP will never need another provider because look, we have everything under one roof. But everything could come across as too much. Maybe things that people don't need, but also maybe too vulnerable, having it all in one place. I don't know. What are your thoughts? If this is the state of the nation, is it, are we going away from that everything under one roof model?
I guess I don't worry as much about everything being under one roof as I worry about how the MSP actually implements the solution. So for me, it's about how are you going to how is your staff going to use that tool set? Are they going to use it by being very rote in their approach? Or are they going to use it, like I said, from a more intellectual perspective of here's my problem, here are my tools. How am I going to now apply the problem to those tools today to this security problem? Because tomorrow my security problem is going to be different because the criminal element is just that fast at changing.
So it's not, I suppose then it's not a security problem, it's a business problem if you're tied into, let's say, an entire suite of services with 1,000 subscriptions. That's not a security problem.
That's a business problem. I do some consulting with firms and I run a few peer groups, and one of the things I see is that they're going broke from purchasing too many tools. And this one does this little thing, and this other one we bought it because of this little feature and that feature. And there's a lot of overlap in features, but people are purchasing them for a particular thing. And by the time you add them all up, we're seeing that cost of service to business going up a lot, right? That per seat cost, and $200, $300, that's typical range now. And almost all of that is eaten up with the cost of the tools. The actual cost of the service, the time that they're spending with implementing those tools has not increased, right? So when I talk to businesses and I say, oh, we should really be paying attention to these CVEs and making sure that we're proactively applying security controls so we're not vulnerable to those items. And they say, yeah, but how do I charge my customer for that? How am I going to make money? Right? I've got this fixed fee that I've applied in a per user, and I've got all these tools in there, and I don't have the money to be able to be proactive with it. I'll have to raise my rates to $400 a seat, right? And can businesses actually absorb that kind of cost? So that's the bad side of having so many tools. And we have many great tools in our industry. I'm not slamming the tools themselves, but the business approach of how do we use those tools most efficiently, that's going to come to a critical head. I don't know if that's this year or next year, but it's got to happen pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, because I suppose I hadn't really considered that. I think we talk a lot about, is this effective? But we don't talk enough about can anyone afford it?
Well, can the MSP or the MSSP afford it within the cost to, can they afford to implement it, right? They're affording to buy the tool because we are seeing massive increase in the amount of tools that people are purchasing. But do they have the labor cost built into their per user price to be able to implement it properly? That's where I'm seeing a bit of a disconnect.
Do you think that would push them towards enterprise customers to compete with maybe some of the more enterprise type players, or are they not really gravitating towards that?
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, can even the enterprise afford $400 per person? Yeah, if you have 100,000 employees.
Quite a lot.
Quite a lot. That's becomes a big, big number for IT that you didn't used to have to build in, but in today's security climate, maybe you do. How does a business afford that? I mean, it's I don't have the answer to that question, but it's definitely one to be concerned about.
So on the state of the nation, do you think that, I mean, everything seems to be a cycle of sorts in some way, shape, or form. And do you think we're going back to the cycle of SaaS providers going direct to customers? Because if these things come to a head, we get loads more SaaS providers on the market, and the margins are getting tighter, and the SaaS providers are getting, not greedier, but they want more revenue, and they look at maybe Microsoft and they say, oh, maybe I'm the next Microsoft. And then they try and go direct. Everything kind of implodes. There's a consolidation, and then they go back, oh no, actually maybe I do need the channel. Are we somewhere on a big cycle like that?
The only one that I actually track with that is Microsoft, and maybe some of the other industry follows Microsoft as a leader. So in Microsoft, at one time they had say 6,000 partners. And I think that number is actually much larger, but moves that they've made in recent years to the Microsoft Partner Program seem to indicate that they think that businesses are going to purchase direct. They've really made moves to decrease the number of partners that they have in their partner program. So much more favorable to sales organizations, less favorable to the MSP. And it's way less favorable to the SMB markets, people that are focused on the SMB market. So Microsoft seems to agree that customers are going to purchase direct.
Which, I mean, is that a cycle? Has it happened before?
Yeah, I think it did happen before. And then I think they, at least in Microsoft, it did. And then they came back around to partners, as being the ones that would be the recommenders of their of their software. But, a lot has changed. Now we have the SaaS marketplace, and people are comfortable going out and making the purchase on their own, especially, now that they don't require specialized hardware and networks and all that kind of stuff. So, but what they really can't purchase directly is that security, right? So I think on the MSP side, as far as selling hardware, selling software, those things are definitely, I think, willing to go out and purchase directly. And that's probably Microsoft's motivation from a Microsoft 365 perspective. But the security tools, that seems to be more of a direct, the customer there is the IT team, whether that's outsourced or, still in-house. So there's probably, we're seeing maybe a split.
Yeah, because some things are kind of easy, especially if you're a bakery. But if my bakery had an IT department, and that IT department wanted the economies of scale of a big security provider, then, I'm not saying the bakery has an IT department, but it might do.
Yeah. Well, but what does it take to, it takes a lot to have a proper security department. And, your bakeries of the world are not going to be able to hire that internally. Just like in times past, it was not easy for them to hire somebody who truly knew about networking or, really understood how to, the person who's doing the baking was not going to understand how to network together their five bakery locations. But today, they don't have to know that. They can go out to the marketplace and say, oh no, I'm just going to get some subscriptions to 365. And we just sort of automatically start to work together and collaborate and be able to share the information that we need. But from the security point of view, there isn't yet that level of security just happens unless I have some, without a specialist, right? Security is still very much a specialist thing because it's changed. Just that pace of change is incredible. I saw this really amazing graphic recently, and I can't think who did it. if I do, I'll send you a link to it, Phelan, but it was a round circle, and it had the number of CVEs for the last 10 years, and there was this, yellow bar, orange bar, red bar, with the red bar being the biggest. So it sort of had these little sunbursts coming out from the center of the rainbow, and in each area of the sunburst was a year, right? So 2014, and the sunburst was very small, right? Didn't seem that small to us in 2014, but fast forward, this rainbow, this sunburst just expands out to where it's like off the chart in 2014, the number of CVEs and patches and things that are coming out for all of the software that we use. It's just an astronomical explosion of vulnerabilities. And is that because the software writing has gotten more terrible over time? No, it's because the motivation for people to find the vulnerabilities in things has increased over time because now it pays well if you can find an exploit and get your and ransom somebody, it pays really, really well. So it's just that level of attack that's out there drives that rate of change, and that's what makes security services so lucrative and so in demand, and why we need to pay attention to it.
And I like how you mentioned marketplaces, because again, state of the nation, I wonder your thoughts on the emergence of marketplaces, because there's always been a place, a marketplace, but in addition to VARs, which, apparently stack them high, sell them cheap, or, there's economies of scale in a VAR, Is there a VAR? That's another question. Are there any pure play VARs left? Dot dot dot. Marketplace seems to be something that people have come up with more and more and say, join my marketplace, sign into my marketplace, and inside my marketplace are all these vendors that I'm taking a cut of, but you can get some of the benefit. I don't know. Is this a new thing, an uptick? What are your thoughts on marketplaces?
There does seem to be an uptick. PAX 8 is a recent one out with the marketplace, right? They announced their marketplace, and I don't know how their partners feel about that. There's a lot of love for PAX 8, but PAX 8 is also going to sell direct. And does that make them different than someone like a CDW? Maybe it doesn't. The definite uptick in marketplace for sure. And that makes it easier for your customers to go out and make those purchases without you. So if anybody has in their plan, their plan for their business, that they're going to continue to make margin, small as it was, on selling software subscriptions, I think they better see what their business looks like when they zero that out.
Yeah, because I can see why a bakery might want to go to a marketplace, but I increasingly wonder why an MSP would want to go to a marketplace. Because, well, I mean, if it's a special marketplace just for MSPs, and that marketplace is like, well, if you buy 100, seats, we'll give them to you for 75, if you resell them. So I can see that working, but then that's less of a marketplace, more of a VAR.
Well, is it? Because I think there's a difference between a distributor and a marketplace. And I see this from my experience in working with Tech Data. And when I work with Tech Data, who's just, they're a true distributor, right? They rewarded my firm for its expertise, right? So I wasn't required to have a volume to get a discount. I was required to have an expertise to get a discount. And to me, that's the difference between a marketplace and a distributor.
Can you unpack that? How does you having expertise excite them enough to give you a better price or to even interact with you? Why do they care? Is it sort of like a contractor world where they're like, no, this is paint just available for the trade because the trade will come back for more, and why are they so excited about your expertise?
Well, if I have more expertise, I'm going to have less churn in my customer base, right? So as I purchase a subscription from them, that prescription is going to continue to sell much longer than if I don't have an expertise and I'm just out there just randomly selling stuff to whoever I can find, right? So because I have an expertise in the area, when I sell something to the client is also purchasing that expertise from me. So our sort of motivations are aligned. And I have to think that that's probably where their motivation to do more reward people that have an expertise in a particular software area, right? It makes their business a little more stable to deal with people have expertise than to deal with just a straight whoever shows up in the marketplace.
I like that. I hadn't considered that. I just thought volume, and of course, if you demonstrate that you're legit and you're long-standing relationship, that's really positive. Do you think that there's sectors in the States and in North America that works better in, like the really S side of the SMB? Versus, I don't know, someone that targets law firms, or even someone that targets some of the tech bro ecosystem, which is really burn and churn, and your partner may not be there tomorrow because the end customer may not be there. Is there some sort of sector that works better in?
I think it works. I think it works very well in it with the customers that an MSP is selling to, and probably who an MSSP is selling to, because we're both aligned to hopefully keep a customer forever. So, and we're not just strictly sales organizations, right? So we see the Microsoft Partner Program moving more toward sales organizations, and we see the Pax8 Marketplace moving more towards sales organizations to, right, pump up those numbers. Will the true distributors of the world that had a different sort of model, is that going to continue to be successful for them now that they have competition from marketplaces, right? Those are their competitors. Those are our options for purchasing. But the relationship is different when you purchase from a marketplace than when you purchase from a distributor.
Okay, so we've looked at marketplaces, we've looked at other forms of MSP, but bundling, security, and so on. But we haven't really tackled buzzwords. Maybe a light-hearted question. What buzzwords do you not like at the moment? What's getting under your skin, and you'd really wish maybe we weren't having to deal with certain buzzwords?
There are two buzzwords that really bother me, and they're not really security related buzzwords, but one is related to the conversation we just had, and that is ecosystem. I hate the word ecosystem when people are really talking about marketplaces as we just did. I just really hate the word easy. Just, I feel like easy has become a buzzword. If you apply the word easy in a conversation about security, I just immediately feel like you're discredited yourself. I mean, I have such a negative reaction to that. And that may be my own personal thing, but because I don't think that security should be seen as easy. Just the things we talked about earlier, the rate of change, the need for that constant intellectualism to understand what's going on in security and how the criminals are changing their tactics. And I just don't think that there's anything easy about security. And if someone sells it that way, I feel like it's disingenuous.
Yeah, because then that becomes tick box exercises and training courses. Because I don't know if you remember, but over the pandemic, what got quite popular was, please give me your training material, oh end customer. I'll put it in my LMS and I'll sell it back to you. And then that'll be an easy training piece, which yeah, everyone needs the awareness, reusing passwords and multi-factor authentication. People need that, but as you say, nothing interesting, nothing easy about it. And I hadn't really considered, which I think is quite nice, the ecosystem word. It is a little, it's a mask, isn't it? It's like, hey, this ecosystem. Actually, it's my closed shop, which prevents you almost, if you've signed up, from doing business and finding things elsewhere. Which is kind of a tricky one, especially when that ties into like open XDR and open AI and things like that.
Well, what could possibly be the value of a closed XDR? I think it's definitely a buzzword. Trying to distinguish themselves from what, I'm not sure. But I mean, imagine a closed XDR that only sees it only sees a very specific element. What value would that be? I mean, you need that holistic view. It's not like the criminal element that you're defending against. They're looking to move laterally across systems, across softwares, across devices, across identities, right? If you can't see across, you're not seeing at all. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there are any, maybe there are, and I'm not aware of them, but I can't imagine the presence of a closed XDR. You know, as an open XDR implies that there must be a closed XDR. I've not seen one.
I've seen one, but I can't name it. It's one of the OEMs, and they say, don't worry, this DR, this extended DR, is across all my products in my ecosystem, but it's an OEM ecosystem, and it's the only time I've seen it. It reminds me of the Chris Rock joke. People say, I take care of my kids. Well, you're supposed to. It's not a selling point. Which.
Part of the definition, right?
Yeah. So I think this is good, and if we look at this as part of the wider trend, and part of a cycle, do you also see, and I'm going to load this question with something that I see, and hopefully you see it too. And if you don't, please push back and tell me you don't see it. I remember 2016 having a conversation with some in the IT ecosystem world, and they said, it's not about security, it's about resilience and backup and disaster recovery. Now they seem to be offering lots of things entitled security. Do you think that we're going a little bit too far in that direction? And we absolutely need to be looking at all of this backup, disaster recovery, and some of those tools. Do you remember the tool that said, what if your employee got hit by a bus? It was quite a graphic advert. Do you think we need to spend more time on that resilience piece?
I do, because it's never been mastered. Everyone wants to think, I guess, that you turn on the backup and then that's all you have to do, but that's never been the case. We had a running total in my MSP, which I don't know if you're aware, but I sold it in October. So after 23 years and 9 months of owning an MSP, I did sell it. And we kept a running total of the number of customers that we spoke to, whether at an event, as prospects, as customers that did sign on with us, a running total of everybody we ever met who had a working backup solution when we met them. And after 23 years and 9 months, that total was five.
Five.
Five. So I had a rule in my MSP that my techs were not allowed to do anything. They could not answer the simplest question from anyone or do perform any work without first checking to see that the backup was functional. That was just part of how we did business because I did view that as a critical component. You called it resilience. I did think of it as security, but as a last resort, right? If all else fails, we still have the backup. We have the backup, right? And we would do everything in our power not to have to use that backup, but we wanted to always be confident that it was there in the worst case scenario. And I
You
can tell you that these backup numbers and that resiliency that you talked about has not improved. If it was there, we would not see so many businesses paying ransoms. They would have an out and they would take it because you can restore a backup in a reasonable amount of time.
I do want to ask you about that. Actually, why not? I'll just jump in. At this event I went to the other week, they presented to me, if you look at the average download speed in the UK, how long would it take to download 2 terabytes of backup data? And it was like, wow, 3 days or something like that. Is Is there any faster slash smarter way of doing it? I don't know, like your MSP comes to the rescue with some of those. Do you remember those jazz tapes? You know, you had the zip discs and jazz drives and things. Like, is there a faster way to do it?
Well, yeah, having a it, having something on premises is definitely going to be faster. Not all businesses have an on premises. However, that means that they probably are using SaaS apps if they don't have an office. And there are many very good SaaS backup solutions now. And they don't take 3 days to download or 3 days to restore because they're not using your internet speed to do it, right? They're doing it across the internet on their own backbone. So it is possible. And the backup solutions today are much more complex because there are SaaS apps and there might still be servers in the office, right? The physical servers to me scream for a physical backup solution because of that problem that you highlighted, right? That business doesn't have the capacity to download from some cloud location the volume of data that people have today. So to me, it needs to have an on-premises solution. It may also have a back cloud storage location as a secondary, but to me, it has to be there. So backup's more complicated and definitely not more likely to actually be working. So if you're listening to this, go check your backup and make sure it's actually functional.
Yeah, because that's the unsexy side, I think. The un maybe the insurer didn't add backup requirements. Maybe they did. I don't know. But for all
Well, the
the
insurer, that's
yeah.
a really good point, right? That's probably another state of the nation thing that we should talk about is the insurance industry and how it's affecting the work that we do. Insurance companies are beginning to dictate what security must be present in a business, right? And if you don't have this, well, then you're either not insurable or we're going to charge you a much higher rate. And increasingly, you're just flat out not insurable. They're getting quite strict with it. And I'm also hearing from folks in the insurance industry that there are now applications and that they all anticipate to begin using these that are security monitoring software that the businesses are required to run. So if you say, we have this tool and it's doing these things, and they say, okay, we have this monitoring tool to make sure that that's correct and that it stays in place during the insured period. To make sure things haven't regressed and whatnot. So they're becoming this sort of overlord that we didn't want in IT.
Like the telemetry boxes in cars.
Yeah, exactly. It's a telemetry box for the security of your business. And we don't in our industry, we don't have anybody who represents us to the insurance industry to say, hey, this is what we think is reasonable in our professional opinion. So the insurance industry just gets to go out and make it up. And I'm sure they have good advisors and good intentions and all of that, but having the insurance industry define what security should be for our clients, to me, doesn't seem like the best strategy or the
Yeah.
best thing that's happened to our industry, right? I think it's a problem for our industry.
Because there doesn't seem to be any recourse if they get it wrong. Apart from, you know, a fully legal recourse, you know, but that, you know, who wants to do that when the business is crumbling around them? You know, people bemoaned, especially last year, the clawback if they said, well, it wasn't a nation state actor, but you can't prove that it wasn't one. So maybe I want my money back.
Right. Yeah, they're putting a lot of caveats on when they might pay out. And it definitely behooves businesses to read the fine print of that insurance, because it's not the check writing system that it used to be. I saw another graph recently that said that the number of businesses paying ransoms is stood down to something like 23% of those that are ransomed, whereas in 2019 it was like 60 some percent. And that sounds good. That do not equate that with the criminals are making less money. They're not. They're making more money than ever from fewer businesses paying the ransom. But why are fewer businesses paying the ransom? And I think it's partially because word has gotten out, please don't pay the ransom, because it's just feeding the sharks. But the other thing is that a lot of those ransoms were paid by the insurance industry, and insurance industry isn't paying anymore.
No, and even if they are, they probably don't want you to know. Like when they work in the physical world, and if there is a K&R situation, well, they definitely don't want anyone to know what they are doing. I'm not saying what they're doing, but whatever they're doing, they don't want people to know what they're doing. So maybe there's a degree of secrecy there, and then maybe it just becomes this rather random fee that you have to pay to operate as a business because insurance is a requirement. However, you know that you'll never get anything meaningful out on a breach and your reputation will be damaged anyway, but yet you have to get insurance. It's weird, isn't it? Because on the one hand, it's going to really affect it, or there'll be a drive to the bottom. Have you got Bob's bargain basement business security? Hey, that's an idea. We could create the bargain basement. We could, but for
It's
those that don't want security.
got a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Bob's bargain basement.
I'm sure someone has trademarked it already. Which, because it seems ever since.
BBB initials, the Better Business Bureau will not be happy about that,
Yes.
but
There's always something. With that. And actually, what's kind of funny for me is when I see some SaaS vendors come across to Europe and they've got nearly the same name as another SaaS vendor. It happened. I was at InfoSec Netherlands just before the pandemic, and this company had the very same name as a big Dutch company. I said, "Have you heard of it?" No. So as people come up with these names, they're bound to clash. But it's not so important, is it, for the name of an MSP, or is it? Is it more important for you, the founder, that you're inspired by your own name, or can you really just call it, local IT Inc.?
I think as long as the name isn't offensive to anybody, it probably doesn't matter much, right? It's your identity and your branding, and you want it to be memorable. You just don't want it to be offensive. A recent trend I've noticed around here is that I'm seeing more firms just coming up with the traditional law firm type thing. It's just a string of people's names. So they're presenting themselves that way, and maybe that's not a bad way to do it either, because a string of names as a business name has a certain cachet to it. So maybe that's why they've decided to go with it. But I sort of noticed more firms doing that today.
What about firms starting their name with like triple A, so they go up in the phone book?
We don't get phone books delivered anymore, but yes, I remember there were many triple A's and ABCs and aardvarks, and so they'd be at the top of the list. But that doesn't work so well on the internet. So that's something that faded away with the printing of the phone book.
Well, that's the sort of thing we have to, keep a watch out for. What is the next variant of that? You'll suddenly see. maybe more fruit names, maybe more flower names, I don't know, maybe more names that are like names, or as you say, maybe people names, because then at least with the mass of anonymity that is part of the internet, at least you can imagine those people being relatable. Could be your buddies, I don't know. Like there's something about that. Maybe that won't ever translate to this us world, but certainly if there was like three names on an MSP in my local area, I don't know. If I think about it's not
I think
bad.
it conveys a certain sense of professionalism, as opposed to the. I don't think he's in business anymore, but I used to see the name Frozen Squirrel,
No.
and that was the name of the IT firm. And I remember seeing the guy and I was like, "Why'd you name your firm Frozen Squirrel?" And he said, "So people would ask me why I named my business Frozen Squirrel, and then I could talk to them about why they need our services." So it was a gimmick, right? He named his business a gimmick. Whatever works for you, I guess.
And certainly like law firms or accountants as well, they like using names. Gives it a certain ring. I don't know. I think it's good fun. It's good fun. But we have to keep a constant lookout, which is why throughout this year we are focusing on a variety of different topics for the MSS Network series of events. I know some topics we might have moved away from and dropped, but I think keeping that trifecta and looking out for what security means for the channel is going to be key. A weird one, a company came and said, I'm interested in meeting the channel. And I said, aha, so, MSPs, MSSPs. And they're like, no. I said, well, then what? And they're like, VARs. It's only VARs we're interested in. VARs are the only channel. I said, but what pure play VARs are left that are not ho managed hosting or MSPs? So just because we're doing the State of the Nation doesn't mean that everyone's kind of cottoned on to it. I don't know.
There's strangely there still are VARs out there, and they manage to make a good living at it, but well, you have to certainly work much harder to be that pure play VAR than you did 30 years ago when that was a commonplace, right? I think a vendor that's looking to sell would be doing themselves a disservice if they only looked at VARs, because it's not like the rest of us don't sell things. We do, because it's just a necessary part of being in this business. It's just not the only thing that we do. It's like, yeah, we do that and right, all the other more important things. Yes, our people. Yes, we sell stuff. We sell software. We sell hardware, but because we have to, not because it's a focus of our business.
Good. Well, I think that's a good place to sort of round on. What about for you? What's next? Where can people next find you?
Well, I'm doing lots of stuff at my company, Third Tier. Everything we do there is working with MSPs, MSSPs, some internal IT in the medium business space. And we've got peer groups, we've got some education programs going on. We're doing a new type of course with Intune right now, and we're going to extend that into Defender XDR and conditional access and some other security topics coming up as well. So just keep an eye out for Third Tier on all the social channels, and well, we'll keep you informed of what's coming up next.
Love it. Well, Amy, thanks very much for coming on. This has been the State of the Nation. I need some sort of music, boom, 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 and I've really enjoyed having you on. I'm looking forward to welcoming you throughout the year. And this has been another fantastic edition of the MSS Network Podcast.
For more MSS content, please visit MSSnetwork.com.